So China has had a long history of discrimination against Muslim minorities in the Central Asian region. Can you tell us where this discrimination stems from?
Yeah, well, certainly. It really stems from the fact that the region itself is a classic case of colonizer and colonized people. So you have the empire of the Qing dynasty really colonizing that region to solidify control. Prior to that, it had been a buffer region that had had, you know, Chinese influence in the region, certainly periods of competing control. But there had been many different powers who had occupied the region or had been involved in controlling the region, including a Uyghur kingdom during, an extensive period of time in the history. So when the Qing dynasty took over that region, when they formalized that region as being part of the Chinese state back in 1884 is when they really do that, it sets up a colonizer-colonized situation. And that has not been recognized by the Chinese state, particularly the People's Republic of China. But for the people in that region, that is their experience, that they are colonized people. And so like colonies elsewhere, we see that in attempts to control the population, in attempts to assimilate them into the majority population, which is the Han Chinese majority, there's been attempts to eradicate all of those things that make them the other. So attempts to eradicate their difference in terms of ethnicity and religion and culture. And one of the big ways that this was achieved initially was to send lots of Han Chinese out from the mainland of China to populate Xinjiang. And that really had a significant impact on the ethnic ratio there, changing it from, at the time of the formation of the People's Republic of China in 1949, the region's Uyghurs were about 76% of the population, with Han Chinese making up just 6.2%. And now we see that it's around about 42% Uyghurs and 40% Han.
Right. And now I guess surveillance technology has ramped up and it's being used by the Chinese police as another form there. So how's the government kind of justified the use of mass surveillance?
Well, they justify it for a number of reasons. They argue that it's to make society safer. And that's because there have been a lot of ethnic tensions flare up across time. The Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities in the region have been subjected to very oppressive policies and discrimination, particularly, you know, during the Great Leap Forward. There was really quite brutal practices towards the Muslim minorities, including forcing them to eat pork, forcing them to do things that religiously prohibited to them. You know, men were forced to shave off their beards, women were not permitted to wear veils. And the Cultural Revolution, similarly, they were targeted as being backwards and preventing modernization. So there's been a long history of really problematic ethnic policies towards the Muslim minorities. And so with this increased surveillance, there's that notion that we need to keep them under control, tightly under control. And we've seen that now transform alarmingly. Joanne Smith-Finlay writes about this. She's an academic in the United Kingdom, to even preemptive policing, where you've got surveillance capabilities that are identifying maybe a group of Uyghur men, for example, and then they're being targeted by security forces. They'll have their identities checked. If their stories don't pan out as to why they're there, then they could face, you know, a period of detention and questioning by authorities. So this very much involves racial profiling. So the surveillance technology is also to the extent where you have a police presence every 50 to 100 metres. And there's been a radical increase in the number of police stations, significant hiring of new police forces, and surveillance technology that can recognise you via your face. It can recognise you via now how you walk, like the particular style of walking that you have. So really incredible, you know, sci-fi movie kind of surveillance technology is being used.
Yeah, it's very deeply disturbing, I guess. It's happening to the widespread population, but then to the Uyghur people more so in discriminatory ways. I mean, recent investigations such as the ABC's, Four Corners investigation looked at the detention centres that are placed around the same region. Can you tell us what's happening in these detention centres, these kind of re-education camps, I guess, if you will?
Yeah, well, look, initially they were first denied by China. They were trying to cover up that they were in existence. And just to go back to a point that you just made, what we tend to see too, what is developed in Xinjiang then gets rolled out across the rest of China. So this type of thing will be happening to potentially, the levels of surveillance to Han Chinese. And we're seeing that now through the social credit system. This is something that was developed in Xinjiang and then it gets rolled out elsewhere. Yep. But in terms of the detention centres, it was really the work of Sean Zhang, who was he's a Chinese-born law student who was studying at the University of British Columbia. He was hearing rumours about these detention centres, so he just started looking at satellite imagery and began to put together a picture of the extent of these detention centres, identifying where they were and comparing satellite imagery and identifying how quickly they were being built. This was then built on by research by Adrian Zenz and James Leibold and Michael Clark and many others who started to put this picture together. So China was no longer able to deny their existence. So they started then to say, well, yes, we are putting into place these detention centres, but they're not detention centres. They are vocational training centres. So we're teaching, poor Uyghurs labour skills that they will be able to use then to, be a productive member of society. But what we've seen is an incredible number of intellectuals, so Uyghur poets, Uyghur journalists, Uyghur academics. I mean, there's people who have taught in universities there for over 50 years, such as Abdulkarim Rahim, who taught at Xinjiang University for over 50 years. He's now been detained since January 2018. So it's clear that these centres are about eradicating Uyghur culture, Uyghur language, Uyghur identity and ethnicity. So this is a campaign of cultural ethnic cleansing aimed at transforming via forced assimilation the Uyghur population into the ideology of the Chinese Communist Party so that they are more in line with what the party wants for all of its citizens. And so we see that this is a really extreme move.
And you can recognise this throughout history, I guess, in targeting intellectuals first and, like the Khmer Rouge, incident. It's just crazy that it's happening right now in this time. Why do you think there hasn't been a stronger action from, internationally foreign powers to stop China's human rights violations?
Well, look, that's quite an interesting dynamic in this. I think initially there has been disbelief. I think initially there was some thought that this couldn't be credible, it couldn't be happening. Because remember, we've got over a million Uyghurs now estimated to be in incarceration. And this is arbitrarily incarcerated. They're not guilty of a crime. So that initial disbelief that a state would do this in the current era. I think also, though, Islamophobia feeds into this. I think that, the bulk of the people who are being locked up are from the Muslim minorities. And so it's able, in a climate of Islamophobia, to fall into a narrative, oh, well, they must have done something wrong. And this is simply not the case. This is clear racial profiling. This is a clear attempt at ethnic cleansing that we are seeing, we are witnessing in our time. And I think also just concern over economics and these sorts of things within the Chinese state, and perhaps fear over the increasing power of the Chinese state to be able to pressure other countries, and force, you know, compliance. But what we have seen, though, and is that increasing attention has meant China is actually now going into some serious damage control. First of all, the international pressure, which largely came from academia and from journalists themselves, but, you know, having to acknowledge that these camps do exist, that has been a victory. Also now we've seen the CCP in China having to invite diplomats from important neighbouring countries, especially those that are significant to its Belt and Road Initiative, especially those that have Muslim populations themselves in large numbers. They've actually taken them on what are staged and controlled tours of the camps. And they're going to ones that are very, you know, mundane and a very shining example, shall we say. They're contrived. But this demonstrates that they are aware that this could really derail their Belt and Road Initiative. So they're having to do this damage control. But also the attention that Turkey's President Erdogan drew to this. He asked for a proof of life of a Uyghur musician who's been detained, and the Chinese government responded by actually within the next 48 hours releasing a video of this musician saying that, oh yes, I'm here and I'm fine and I'm learning all about the CCP and about all my wrong thoughts. So pressure does work, and I think more attention and more pressure from the outside is really key to trying to end this practice.
Yeah, I mean, and as we are gaining more transparency from these investigations, and as you say, you know, we can recognise that these are facades being put up, hopefully we can, yeah, enact some change and see justice for the Uyghur population. Anna, thank you so much for your time on the show. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.